Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that will make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that really matter. We do the work so that you can just make smart decisions. Sit back and amaze your friends. Your wide receiver one won't change, but it's the nitty-gritty, it's the flex and the waiver wire pickups. That's where your league is won or lost. So follow Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The London game was a weird game, started very weird. It was just a very, very weird game. And I addressed my D-line about that, just about how weird these games could be. I remember the game we played in Jacksonville and it was a sunny day. I mean, great day. I remember it vividly, but it was just a weird aura. And then playing in London, it was just a weird, I can't even explain it. It was just a weird game. And I ain't never beat these guys, so it's just weird, man.
Ed Oliver, it's pretty weird. Bills, Jags. Let's get weird. Bills, Jags. I mean,
he's never beaten him. That's true.
He's not wrong. You hear him say that. Every Bills fan's like, yeah. The playoff game in 2017 is pretty weird.
Yep.
Let's go all the way back to Nate Clements not knocking down a 4th-and-12 and then Ernest Wilford catching a touchdown in the back of the end zone on opening day. That was pretty weird.
Okay. Yep.
Mark Brunell won a playoff game here. That's pretty weird.
Have we ever had a good Bills-Jaguars memory?
The Josh Allen touchdown pass to Robert Foster.
That was
against the Jags. And that was pretty weird because it's still impossible to understand how he could make the throw.
Yeah.
All right, add that to the weird chronicles.
There was also Allen making a perfect pass before he was really that good a passer. Like, he was pretty inaccurate in his rookie season.
Yeah.
And that was, like, a perfect pass. That game, the only two things I remember from that game, that pass and I think Leonard Fournette and Shaq Lawson getting in a fight and Sal in the middle of it.
That's pretty weird.
There's a good picture of Sal in between those two ready to go at it.
There are two London games against this team. That's pretty weird.
The first London game. The first London game.
I was at the first one. I left at halftime because the Bills were getting stomped on, and they came back and took a lead.
That's a story, isn't it, by the way? You went all the way to London for a Bills game, and you left at halftime.
Yeah.
Come on, man. You went across the globe.
I dare you to watch that first half. I dare you to watch that first half and tell me you would have stayed. There's also,
I would have stayed just because I would have felt like I had to.
There's also context. I was at the game with my now wife. She was flying back to the U.S. the next day, and I was flying to Spain with my buddy, like to stay in Europe for a couple of days.
Okay.
And it was kind of like, hey, we only have one more night here. Why would we subject ourselves to the second half of this game when a world city is, you know, at our feet? So we left.
And missed EJ Manuel hitting Marcus Easley for a bomb touchdown.
That's right. That's right. I missed that. And instead, I was walking 10 miles looking for a fish and chips.
That's pretty weird. That guy was on the Bills for like 8 years. I think that was his only catch.
Weird. All right. Ed Oliver said weird as many times as we found weird.
All right. It's a weird rivalry.
It is weird.
It's maybe the Bills' weirdest rival, the Bills and the Jaguars. Well, yeah?
Is there anything else we forgot?
You mentioned the playoff game. Wasn't the thing about the playoff game they threw? Did they have third and goal, second and goal? Were they on the one and threw a fade to Kelvin Benjamin and then it blew up?
I don't know.
Offensive pass interference, maybe. Does that ring a bell? I just remember hating the fade route after that game. Like, they had a shot to get in and they threw a fade to Benjamin and it all went wrong. Maybe against Jalen Ramsey. I don't know. And then Peterman, of course. That season had to end on a Peterman interception.
That's right. Peterman got picked up by Jalen Ramsey on like the last play.
That's how the game ended.
He went in because Tyrod got hurt.
Yeah.
It's pretty weird. Peterman goes in to finish out the season.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Bills and Jags.
Flutie's broken play against the Jags was weird. Thanks to Russ for tweeting that in. Yeah.
Yeah, drought Bills against the Jags. Isn't there a Bledsoe game in there where they score a million points?
Ooh. Bledsoe and the Jags.
I think, again, I'm like 9 maybe, so it's very, fuzzy.
There was a 98-yard touchdown pass to Terrell Owens against the Jags.
Yeah, okay, that's good, yes.
James Hardy caught a game-winning touchdown against the Jags.
James Hardy had a game-winning catch?
I think so.
Did he?
Did he not? Didn't he have one play?
I don't remember a single play from his Bills career. Rest in peace, James Hardy. I found the Bledsoe game. Any memory of this? 2003. Week three, or it'll be week two. Week two of 2003. So that's Bledsoe's second year with the Bills, right? The Bills beat the Jags 38-17. Bledsoe goes for 314 yards, 2 touchdowns. Anything? In Jacksonville.
Yes, that's week two.
Week two. Big Bobby Shaw game.
That's week two because, so they beat the Patriots 31-0 the week before.
Yeah.
Then they go to beat the Jaguars.
38-17.
And on PTI, which was actually on the air back in that time,
wow.
They talked about the Bills as the best team in football. And then the Bills went to, if I'm not wrong, Miami the next week and got beaten by the Dolphins when Ricky Williams ran it 42 times.
Sounds like...
Check.
Okay.
I'm serious.
It sounds like a Bills drought season to a T, though. Well, I guess not many they would have been called by PTI the best team in football.
No, I think Travis Henry threw an interception in that game, too. Week three, Miami primetime game.
Yeah, they lost 17-7.
Okay. Show me a Travis Henry interception and 42 carries for Ricky Williams.
Do you remember it being a Sunday night game?
Yes.
Okay. It was Sunday night football at Pro Player Stadium. Is that the same stadium, probably?
Yep, same one.
Dave Wanstead's Dolphins.
Of course.
All right, and yeah, there's a... Hold on here. What was the... You got Ricky Williams doing 40, what?
42 carries.
Ricky Williams, 42 for 153 and a touchdown.
42 carries in a football game.
Travis Henry, 0 for 1 with an interception.
Let's go.
He was... Travis Henry... Look at the starting running backs in this game. Ricky Williams, 42 for 153 and a touchdown. Travis Henry, 5 carries for 7 yards.
By the way, you were right on the James Hardy touchdown as well, but it was a go-ahead touchdown.
Okay.
It wasn't the last second game.
No, they went ahead, but they did win the game 20-16.
Yes. He scored a 7-yard touchdown pass from Trent Edwards to make it 17-16 with 4:10 to go in the fourth quarter.
All right.
This team, just give me a dominant... The Jags, enough. They should be smoking this team every time they play them. This team is dumb, and they are never as good as you think they are, and the Bills just can't beat them. Come on. 40-point performance here against the Jags. And they're due. They're due to destroy the Jaguars. They beat everybody by 100 in the last 5 years, except this team.
All right, so...
Even when their coach is out there kicking the kicker at practice, is beating them 9-6.
Yeah. How's it going to be weird this time? We'll find out. Monday Night Football. We're going to get weird. 803-0550. All right, in addition to talking Bills-Jags a little bit, we've asked the question, what is the weirdest... most dramatic rules change you support? After Mel Kiper yesterday said they should ban too high safety looks, what's the rule change you support? Brian Mazurowski down the hall at BEN. Allow NHL teams to have different size rinks. That's a wild one.
Kind of like baseball with different size fields.
Yeah, unique rinks, basically. Jeff writes in, after scoring the ability to keep the ball on a 4th-and-20 instead of kicking off. That's the Schiano. Greg Schiano has that crazy rule. Instead of the onside kick, let's do a 4th-and-20 play. Matt writes in, a play-in tournament for the NHL, similar to what the NBA does. And the NBA has done that to I think great reviews. High seed choosing playoff opponents, support that. Another one, harshly enforce intentional grounding.
Harshly enforce, so that means what?
I think that means actually enforce it. Because right now you watch games, you're like, he definitely intentionally grounded that ball, but we don't call that intentional grounding.
Yeah, Rodgers, you see, there was a play last night where Rodgers was in the pocket, here comes the pressure in his face, and he's maybe on the 30, and he throws the ball out of the back of the end zone.
Into the second deck. Yeah, it was a heave.
And he's immediately runs to the ref and is going... Oh, no, I was trying to throw it to him. Garrett Wilson is maybe 15, 20 yards to the right, and he's trying to – and they let him go on it. That would be – okay, all right, we're gonna be easy on you on this one. That would be letter of the law. Okay, the ball landed 30 yards from the nearest receiver. We probably should throw a flag here.
Let's get Mark and Tonawanda. Hey, Mark, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I just think that the quarterback play is down, and that's the reason for this lack of passing. And just taking back to, it felt like when Diggs was here, Josh Allen in the playoffs is either to Diggs or run. And I think that you have the upper echelon of quarterbacks and then a huge drop-off. You have Mahomes, Allen, you put in Stroud and, say, Burrow. But after that, it just maybe, offenses aren't as complex where – guys like Peyton Manning, Brady, they couldn't run. They didn't have that that pass run option that colleges are using and bringing these quarterbacks up in. And I think the reads are a lot less, and that's the result of what we're seeing. But also, Jeremy, I love your hockey rule at the end of the game, but I'd extend that to periods too.
Sure.
I don't want the NHL or the other team going in for an intermission.
Yeah.
For a break. Right. So.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, that's the one that if you take a penalty, the game can't end. Football does that. If you take a penalty on the last play, what do? They extend the game.
Yeah.
There's another play. Like, we're not going to end the game on a penalty. Are you crazy? Why would we do that? You could just cheat at the end.
Right.
And hockey, oh, no. Take a penalty with 10 seconds left, that's fine. Game over.
There really should be more tackling when there's like 5 seconds left in a hockey game.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you do that?
And then just don't touch the puck.
Lindy, get on this with the players. Enforcing them. Guys, if there's 5 seconds left and we're up one, everybody tackle the nearest player.
Yeah. It's amazing NHL teams haven't employed that.
Yeah.
Even 20 seconds left. How, there's a face-off and, you know.
How true is it that, like, how many are there? Quarterbacks in the league that are starting, have started already in this season and are going to start week three, they're just legitimately bad. And they are really making this all look worse than it is.
Well, to that point, can I read you something about Bryce Young, who might be your first answer on this?
Because he would be the worst.
Okay.
QBR this year, he is dead last with a 9.1.
Okay. Charles Robinson of Yahoo wrote this about Bryce Young. When I talk to personnel people around the league and ask them if everyone was simply wrong in their draft assessments of Bryce Young, the response is similar. They all believe that Young still has the talent and the tools to succeed in the NFL, and they all seem to believe the culprit behind his failure is Carolina's surrounding roster and organizational chaos.
Okay.
So I only bring that up because I found that yesterday and thought it was amazing. Here are your number one example for the worst quarterback in football. This guy's just not good. It's like, actually, the team stinks. The system stinks. Which, I don't know.
That's for the worst guy.
Because there are guys that we've seen this happen with. Goff was horrible.
Yeah.
And then got Sean McVay and was good.
Yep.
And now he's in another good system and he can play. And I don't know how many other guys that this example is so drastic with. Darnold is 2 weeks into looking good again.
Yep, and he's someone that was one in that Carolina spot, and before that it was Adam Gase.
Baker Mayfield is someone that had looked like it was over and is now kind of good again. Derek Carr, maybe. Like,
there's not all these guys,
no,
right?
I know.
It's not Daniel Jones, right?
No, that's right.
He's just bad.
It looks like he's just bad.
Deshaun Watson. He's just bad.
Looks like he's just bad.
I guess, though, like, maybe it's half and half. Maybe there are guys where, you know, why is it not going well for, I'm looking at QBR right now, like, for the season. Why is it not going as well for Trevor Lawrence as it might? Trevor Lawrence, I saw, had, in the third quarter, when he first got the, during his second drive of the third quarter, he had 16 passing yards last week. Like, the first half of the game, nothing. And there are people wanting more from him. Is it that he's not as good as his production, which is like middle of the road at best? Or is it just that Doug Peterson might actually not be a very good offensive coach? That their system might actually not be that good for a quarterback to get the most out of him?
It is funny, the thing about Lawrence. Like, the evaluations of Lawrence, film guys on Twitter and online will tell you that Lawrence is still elitely talented and great. But if we're looking at where he is in his career arc, we had a Jags guest on this week who said he doesn't do enough to make you think he's one of the top guys. He started with Urban Meyer. All right, that's a disaster. Everybody gave him a pass. Urban Meyer, chaos, forget that. Never mind. Then it's Doug Peterson, and it looks better.
Yeah, that 4,100 yards, 25 touchdowns, 8 picks.
Yeah, it looks better, but 25 touchdowns.
Right.
In today's game, 25 is... it's not that impressive if you're not running them in. Like, if Allen runs in, if Allen throws 25, If Allen throws 25, he's running for 15.
Right.
And how many does Lawrence run for? Like two?
That year four? He ran for five.
Five.
It's usually like three, four, or five.
Okay.
Yeah.
25 is not a very big number for an elite level quarterback.
No, for someone who. Nicknames on Pro Football Reference, man. For someone whose nickname on Pro Football Reference who is the Prince Who Was Promised. Yeah, 25 touchdowns is not amazing for the Prince Who Was Promised, I must say.
They've not really ever been short on weapons for him.
They've always, last year it was Calvin Ridley, and Kirk's been there for a couple of years. So they've always been good. Have they ever had like a true elite number one? They probably haven't had that though. But they do have a staple of, they're the team who like everybody eats should be the thing about them, because they have a bunch of guys that are good. Evan Ingram even, right? The tight end's pretty good. So yeah, I don't know. Like he might be one though where I might say it's more about the system than it is about him. I might want to trust the film guys who are showing me three throws a week, like that this guy layering throws. He made the touchdown to Brian Thomas against Miami.
Unbelievable throw, that one.
Like might be one of the best throws in the league all year. So I might want to think there's a, if he had Brian Daboll, or if he had, you know, it doesn't have to be McVay or Shanahan, just if he had somebody else, that he might be one of those guys. Anyways, like the whole totality of the point here is maybe it's a combination of it, that you have bad systems in the league right now, and you have a lot of bad quarterbacks in the league right now. Maybe the difference between the top guys and the bottom guys, both at coordinator and at quarterback, is as great as it's ever been.
803-0550. Get some more calls in here. James in Hamilton. Hey, James, good morning.
Morning, guys. I was wondering if maybe allowing pre-snap forward motion from the receivers like they do up here in the CFL would help. Get a little bit more separation, a little bit more motion. You might get might get a little more passing offense.
Uh-huh.
Thoughts?
You know, anytime there's a suggestion to borrow something from another league, I think we have to entertain it as possible. You know, forward motion, CFL's had that. The Arena Football League has always had that. I don't know if the XFL ever had that.
I don't think they did.
But I don't hear a lot of chatter for that. I mean, right now what you have is one player is allowed motion. They're not allowed to move forward. You are allowed to put two players in motion, but they must reset, right?
Yep.
I wonder if motion changes. I mean, that would be small kind of stuff. And again, like that's the thing about any sort of NFL rule change. A small change leads to, boom, it's a petri dish. Bam, let's see what everybody comes up with. And if all of a sudden I've got Tyreek Hill running forward at the snap, that actually might break football.
Like, it might. I might like this. Isn't that my answer for, if I'm directly looking at the two high safeties, they're in the parking lot. That's the thing. Mel Kiper says you're not allowed to line up 20 yards back. Isn't it kind of the same solution, just doing it a different way by allowing, hey, you're allowed to have one receiver running forward. This is how it's going to be. No one can figure out right now how to get plays in over the top. We want our big plays. We want our splash plays on offense because that's what people want to see. That's what fans want to see. We're not going to tell you can't line them up 30 yards behind the line of scrimmage, but we're going to allow Curtis Samuel to be running forward when the snap gets to Josh Allen.
803-0550.
I might not hate it.
We're talking Bills, Jags. Russell, we're asking for your crazy rule ideas on the heels of Mel Kiper wanting to ban too high safety looks. So there are no bad ideas, especially if we ask for them. Dennis in Williamsville. Hey, Dennis. Good morning.
Hey, guys. So this one kind of goes to the quarterback conversation you were just having, but I don't know if you guys saw the Colin Cowherd statement yesterday about, you know, how some quarterbacks are system dependent, and he said Josh Allen's at the very top of the list with needing to have a perfect situation with an offensive coordinator.
Yeah, he said he was coordinator dependent.
Yeah.
Yes. And Patrick Mahomes is not in things. And I mean, that's just like a weird take, but especially with the guys he named. But I do think that does matter a lot. I mean, could you imagine being Sam Darnold getting drafted by the Jets and just thinking, holy crap, you know, like, or Zach Wilson, you know, these guys. And then you get a chance to go somewhere else, and the system and the whole organization makes such a difference for you. I mean, look at Geno Smith; he's another one. Yeah. I mean, you guys named three or four, and there's even more of them out there, and it happens all the time. I mean, I am not one to say Patrick Mahomes the overrated thing or anything like that. That's not me. However, I would say I think he got drafted to the best situation any quarterback could possibly ever get drafted in. With Andy Reid, you know, I mean, he took Alex Smith and Donovan. Every quarterback he's ever touched has made it to the AFC or NFC championship game multiple times. I mean, so to get drafted into that system, when another guy gets drafted into the Jets system who can't make the playoffs for 30 years, you know, I mean, it makes such a difference.
Yeah, the point about coordinator dependent, thanks, Dennis. I heard that and thought, it sounds like an insult, and he might have meant it as...
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that will make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that really matter. We do the work so that you can just make smart decisions. Sit back and amaze your friends. Your wide receiver one won't change, but it's the nitty-gritty, it's the flex, and the waiver wire pickups. That's where your league is won or lost. So follow Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
He's, you know, coordinator dependent. I would agree, but I would also say everybody's coordinator dependent and supporting cast dependent. And that, to me, that shouldn't be controversial. Like, the reason that he listed Mahomes and Burrow ahead of him because they're not coordinator dependent, could that just be because their coordinator is their head coach? So those two are going to have a completely flatlined, like, you've removed a variable.
Right.
And with Allen, let's say that Joe Brady puts Allen in a perfect situation. The Bills are amazing all year. Guess what? He gets a new coordinator next year. And then his success will depend on how good that coordinator is. So to call him coordinator dependent, he might have meant it as an insult. He might also meant it as he has built-in volatility based on the fact that he's going to always be changing coordinators.
Feels like you should have saved that for when he's making a point about defensive coaches.
Right. That's probably right.
Yeah.
And, you know, to your point about systems here, let's look at New England right now. Last night, Jacoby Brissett, like, the honeymoon's over. He didn't do anything any good at all.
Yep.
And Jerod Mayo was asked about when is it time to start Drake May. Drake May went in last night. Mop-up duty behind a terrible offensive line on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a team doing that against New England. I think it was J.P. Lossman. Like, hey, hey, kid.
Here's your debut.
How's your broken leg? Go out there and throw an... I don't know if that was the same day he threw an interception to Tully Bantakane. Anyway, there's a name for you.
I didn't know there was a Tully in the NFL.
Tully Bantakane.
Tully Bantakane.
Yeah, he's a former Patriots defender. He intercepted Lossman. So... The Patriots, are they really thinking about starting Drake May next week? You didn't want to start him. You got to protect him. Mm-hmm. And now it's week four, and you're going to start him against, checks the schedule, the 49ers? This is a good idea?
Uh-huh.
You're Drake May, you get drafted to New England. Versus, I mean, Chicago
is supposed to be a good setup.
It is supposed to be a good setup.
At least more than the other rookie ones.
Right, but none of those guys got a great offensive guy. With a group, I've got in Chicago. Yeah. It's who?
Shane Waldron. Shane Waldron.
In Washington, it's Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
And in New England, it's Alex Van Pelt.
The guy that was supposed to maybe have it was Bo Nix with Sean Payton, but Sean Payton might be toast. It's like one of the best.
It is
offensive minds.
Right. The coordinator dependent point. I like it to layer in context. Think about what Mike McDaniel has done with Tua, a guy that was limited, and he put a perfect system around him, or whatever. He's got a system that works for Tua. How about Matt LaFleur last week? What he did with Malik Willis.
Mm-hmm.
easy throws, keep it simple, do this.
We'll do these quarterback runs.
We'll design a system that will win a game. And not every quarterback gets that opportunity as a young guy. 803-0550. The Bills did a good job with Allen right away. Like, they brought him along the right way. They helped develop him. Doesn't mean he wouldn't have succeeded elsewhere, but the Bills had a good system in place. So I like the point. I like that conversation in general. 803-0550. If you're on hold, we'll get to you. And Jets-Patriots recap. Sal coming up. The latest on the injury report. How the Bills are talking about the Jags as a weird game. Ed Oliver said a lot of weird parts of it, and it seems he's right. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio, Sal Capaccio,
on WGR.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline. It is Football Friday. Football Friday, brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Not bad. That game last night, Jets-Patriots in the division. Aaron Rodgers, I think, looked the best he's looked yet, not just throwing, moving, running. He looked like a regular quarterback. So maybe a couple weeks where he was just kind of feeling it out or shaking off rust. I thought Rodgers looked pretty good last night.
Yeah, I mean, I had said a couple weeks that he looked old and immobile. He did not last night. Mm-hmm. Last night he was running around, extending plays, even gaining yards for a first down. Throwing on the run, throwing from the pocket. He looked good last night. First couple weeks also, maybe a bit of a lie on the Patriots. I mean, I have no idea how they beat the Bengals. I mean, watching that team last night, how in the world did they do that? Because they have no offense whatsoever. And defensively, they're pretty sound, but the Jets did a really nice job on them. But man, if you're a Patriots fan, that offense looks like it is. I mean, we talk about all these like NFL numbers and stats and charts and, you know, going back to whatever years. That offense looks like it's stuck in 1979. Yeah. I mean, it is crazy. Not explosive or good.
I was watching the Next Gen Stats Cast last night, Sal, and like every play they have like a different number, and it felt like the whole night was just more ways of telling me how bad the Patriots offensive line is. And they couldn't block a Jets defensive line, who, by the way, like, that was supposed to be the weakness of their defense. And I don't know, last night they were getting after Brissett, it felt like, every other play.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it seemed like whenever they had a manageable play, third down three, maybe they could do this. Bam, there goes Brissett. He's down. They couldn't block anybody, right? So,
yeah.
I agree with you. It's just, the other part I thought of, and this kind of made me smile a little bit, but it's true. Like, if you're a Patriots fan watching that, how far away do you think they are? I mean, it felt like, I was going to tweet this at one point, I didn't, but it felt like some of the lowest of the lows of drought era Bills football. Like, oh my God, they just are so inept. How far away is this team truly? They need so much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When they made the decision to go to Brissett over Drake May, and the reasoning was, well, they're not ready for a young quarterback. To me, Sal, that was a red flag because they just had a young quarterback. How could you not be ready for a young quarterback? You drafted another one, 3 years after you just had one? And to not have anything in place around him offensively is kind of amazing. But anyway, yeah, it looks rough for them. On to Bills-Jags. Let's get to Monday night's game. It is a Football Friday. We were having some fun, Sal, with Jags memories because Ed Oliver talked about this matchup. Weird things happen. He said weird a lot. And we found about 15 weird things that have happened between these two teams. Maybe none weirder than a fight that you were right in the middle of.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Someday it'll be my book. I've always said, like, if I ever write a book, like, I'm including some of the craziest things happening on the sidelines. And that would be near the top of the list. That was Leonard Fournette and Shaq Lawson. But it started with a play down the field between I don't remember the receiver for the Jags at the time, but Micah Hyde and Jordan Poor over there. There was some words exchanged, some pushing and shoving, and then all of a sudden, and Shaq Lawson is over there, and here comes Leonard Fournette charging from the other side of the field, essentially, and they start swinging at each other, and I get bumped into the wall, and I'm hightailing it out of there. I also remember, like, there was a there was a security guard whose back was turned, and like he got drilled in the back as guys were coming down there. It was a pretty wild scene. And then after that, obviously, you guys remember, Fournette's getting walked to the locker room shack. There's only one tunnel, right? And they basically are trying to fight on their way to the locker room, and Fournette was going crazy. It was a wild scene. You're right. That was something very crazy that happened that day.
Do you remember what kind of the Urban Meyer game too? Like we kind of mention it offhand here, like 9-6. Like the score was nuts, and the fact that they lost to him. But the game itself is kind of a blur to me. And then you have the London game last year. So the last two meetings between these teams, there's not really much you could take. Even though I feel like you know the quarterback at least for Jacksonville is the same.
Do you know what I remember about that game in Jacksonville, the Urban Meyer game? All the talk after the game about how, and it was true, like there was like zero energy on the Bills sideline. Do you guys remember that? Like, we were like, what is going on? Like, there was a lot of talk about that, and people kept saying, like, what did you see down there? I'm like, yeah, it was like, I mean, I didn't necessarily notice in the moment, but when you think about it and it was brought up, like, you're right, it was not your typical energetic sideline, I guess. I remember that. Like, it just was, they could never get into it. And maybe it's because they've been down and they were just kind of like, you know, nervous anticipation, like when are we going to make a play? That can happen too. And it just kept snowballing. I remember that. I just remember the Bills, every time they'd get the ball, like, okay, this is the drive they'll put together. Well, nope, there goes another turnover. Oh, nope, there goes another fourth down stop. Oh, there goes another third down stop and a punt coming up. It felt like every time they got the ball and had a chance, just something would happen. You'd feel like they could go down the field and score, and they never could. They hardly got past like the 40 of Jacksonville, I think, that day. Something weird would happen, to use Ed Oliver's word, every time. And then London last year, guys, I mean, it was great being there, and there was a lot of talk about travel and when they were going and when they weren't. And I just thought it was always a tough setup for the Bills anyway, because the Jags had been there for a week. They'd been rested. They'd been ready. Their bodies were acclimated. And then, of course, all the injuries. That was the story of last year's London game for me, was the injuries. And I think if the Bills don't lose Daquan Jones and don't lose Matt Milano both in the same game, I think we're probably talking about a bit of a different story.
We know they will be without Terrell Bernard, Taron Johnson in this game. You know, picking things up the rest of the way, Sal, you know, you mentioned Daquan Jones right there. I'm at a point where when I hear about a Bills matchup and I hear their offensive line might have a problem, I expect the Bills to feast. I know it's only been two games, but this defensive line, two games in, has come together and started to look like one of the better lines they've had under Sean McDermott, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think the Bills have, you know, built a nice depth, some nice depth on their defensive line. I think that, you know, getting Von Miller to where he is after 2 weeks, he's done well, and he looks like he's kind of back to what you'd hope. That was always a key X factor for this group. So I agree with you. Now, look, getting Tuan Smoot is going to help a lot, too. I think, to me, watching him in camp and preseason, guys, he was always a really important player. And then when he shows up with a toe injury 2 days before the opener, when that was unexpected, it wasn't like he got hurt in preseason and they knew he wasn't going to play. They had to make some modifications already to week number one, and then you had to elevate Cameron Klein. And then on 5 days later, 4 days later, you elevate, you know, Kingsley Jonathan because he can't play the Thursday night game. Well, now you get Tuan Smoot back, and I wonder even now how much more they can do with that D-line and how much better they can be, and because I think that that's a guy that they're really going to count on to do a lot up front. I just think they have flexibility, they have versatility, they have depth, and you know, so far so good. And this is a team, the Jaguars, that has had some struggles on the offensive line, yes. Last week, they gave up the safety against the Cleveland Browns. Oh, look, Cleveland is a good, good defense. They really are. They have a very good defensive coordinator in Jim Schwartz. You can't compare a lot of teams to Cleveland, but Buffalo's a very good defense, too. And I do think this is a team that the Bills, especially at home, in a loud crowd on a night game, can maybe try to take advantage of that.
Does it feel like, for the revenge factor, Sal, with the revenge game factor, with much more Gabe Davis coming back, both of those players meant a lot for the Bills, but Davis, we had a guest on earlier in the week, a Jaguars guest, that said, like, it's not really going great so far. And maybe that is Jaguars fans and media realizing that he has more of a role than just pass catcher, because it does feel like, you know, maybe they're going through the same thing we went through, where he's on the field all the time, but you look up at the end of the game and it's only a couple of catches at the end of the day.
Yeah, he has six catches so far, the same number as Brian Thomas Jr. And what's interesting is, you know, Gabe was always the big play downfield guy. Brian Thomas Jr. has actually kind of been more of that guy for them. Yeah. Brian Thomas Jr. is averaging 23.5 yards a catch. He's had some big ones. Now, Gabe is up there. 17.5 is nice. It's a nice number. Mm-hmm. It is still his – it's kind of what he did in Buffalo. So it feels to me like he's the same player there. Yeah. It's like, you know, Gabe is going to be – this is his – this is what he does. I don't think that the Jaguars are I don't know if the Jags had a plan to use him differently than the Bills did, saw him as a different player the Bills had. But it feels like Gabe Davis is who he is. And whether it's in Buffalo or Jacksonville, he's going to get you 2 to 3 catches a game, maybe one big play. He has a 22-yarder, his longest play down the field. At some point, maybe a bigger play than that. He's going to have a nice average. He's going to gain some first downs. And, you know, that you're right, Joe, used in other ways, like blocking in the run game, things like that. I'm getting that sense, too, that maybe they're feeling that part of it, which is, okay, we signed this guy to this contract. What's he making, 12, 13 a year?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, what is really his role other than this? Well, this might be his role. And I don't know if their reaction to that is negative, but it feels to me overall, this is who Gabe Davis is, whether it's Buffalo or Jacksonville. And the Bills know that. And I think the Bills know what he is or isn't capable of as he comes in here, too.
What about on the Bills' offensive side of the ball? We spent so much this week on the defensive injuries and the matchup against the Jaguars' offense. Who, like last week, this would have been Kincaid, I think, easily. Is there a guy that comes to mind for you who hasn't really been used a lot or a part of the offense as much in the first two games that you could see the Bills leaning into a little bit more in this matchup?
Curtis Samuel, absolutely. Even more than Dalton Kincaid. I wonder how much the toe injury has impacted Curtis Samuel. Even before the opener, when we talked to him, he didn't say like he was still dealing with it, but he said he's taking it day by day still. Like it wasn't, he didn't say he was ready to go 100%. I just felt like it was still something bothering him. Is it still? I'm not sure. You go two games, and through those two games, Curtis Samuel only has 3 catches. He does not have a run yet. We know that the Bills want to use him in different ways. Now you've had this nice break. You've had 11 days off. I can't believe the Bills signed Curtis Samuel to $8 million a year, their highest paid receiver, not a ton of money, had the numbers he did under Joe Brady when they played last time, did all these different things. Then in camp, we see all this stuff. I can't believe after 2 weeks, that's actually how they want to use him, what we've seen. I have to believe in some capacity, the toe injury, whether it's preparation leading up to the games and the game plan or simply in the games and managing his workload, I would have to believe that that has had some sort of impact on that.
So Capaccio checking in on Bills, Jags. Thank you, Sal. Sean McDermott today on the Extra Point Show?
Yeah, 10:15 a.m. Okay. So we get Sean at 10:15 a.m. now. We know the injuries, and there's no official designations until tomorrow for the game on Monday night, but we'll still ask Sean about any injuries and, you know, see how guys are, you know, trending throughout the week, especially the guys that have kind of been limited that are back to practice.
All right, very good. That's the Barnes Injury Report, the Barnes Firm. Car crash for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Thanks, Sal.
You got it.
Back on the other side, I've got to tell you a quick little story about last night. So Howard goes into the Broadcasting Hall of Fame, the Buffalo Broadcasters Hall of Fame, and another inductee that I want to tell you two about, because it'll be basically an edition of a grandpa tells you a story about what things used to be like a long, long, long time ago. Me being grandpa, not Howard. We'll get to that. And Kevin Cole, and unexpected points. He joins us 8:15, Chris Brown 8:30. Football Friday rolls along here on WGR. All right, quick story here. Grandpa's going to tell you a story, Joe. You ready?
Let's hear it.
So yesterday, last night, went to the Buffalo Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame dinner. Howard Simon goes in, legend of the game. Number of inductees go in. You know, a lot of people from radio and television and film. Like it was a cool event. And one of the names, Ken Kaufman, goes in. He and I'm sitting at the table with Alan Davis, our program director, and his wife, and Tim Wenger and Susan Rose, and was reminded that there was a time. It's like me telling you that payphones used to exist. There was a time where in this building, Ken Kaufman was the guy that wrote jingles and played instruments and sang songs. There was a there's a room in this building where when you opened the door, it was like a studio with a guy with a piano and a keyboard and saxophones and cymbals and drum, and they made
just jingle. In there making jingles.
Making jingles. Yeah.
A jingle room.
Yes.
There was a jingle room?
Yeah.
What? Is it still is it still around? I mean, there wouldn't be saxophones and stuff in
there. It's one of our conference rooms now. There used to be where the jingles were.
Which one of the conference rooms?
Yep.
Just been in there before and didn't know it was a jingle room before?
Nope.
This needs to come back.
We should have a jingle room.
We need a jingle room.
Everybody needs a jingle room.
So there were like all sorts of like tambourines and whatnot? Just anything you...
I think so.
A sly whistle maybe?
Maybe.
I've got it being like a song like the one we're playing right now.
Yes.
I don't want to make it like a comedian's proper.
And the song would have been about dry cleaning or, you know, like jingles. Jingles work. Jingles are great.
Wow.
So there you go. That's my story from last night.
A jingle room.
I was reminded of the jingle room. When we return, we got an open segment, 803-0550, your crazy sports idea that, you know, you want to be Mel Kiper for a minute? Give us a call. Your crazy idea you do support. He wants to ban two high safeties in the NFL. Kevin Cole, the Unexpected Points podcast, he had a lot of good stuff on this. The chess match of football, we'll get into that with him coming up at 8:15. Chris Brown on a Bills-Jags preview coming up at 8:30. Football Friday, we're going to spend some time remembering some Jags.
Let's go.
I'm on the board with Keenan McCardell. Ever heard of him?
No.
Oh, that's kind of sad. All right, it's tough. All right. That's fine.
Fred Taylor.
That's
my start.
Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
Hey, fantasy football owners. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception, a podcast dedicated to the wide receivers. Are you as confident in your flex as you are in your wide receiver one? I didn't think so. So follow Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.